Welcome to Words of Grace, radio ministry of Elder Ben Winslet, pastor of the Flint River Primitive Baptist Church near Huntsville, Alabama. We invite you to stay tuned to today's broadcast.
Have you ever noticed that human beings tend to gravitate towards extremes? Well, if you've ever made that observation, certainly you're not alone, and that's actually something that the Bible warns against. Today on Words of Grace, I'm going to share with you a message that I delivered last weekend from the pulpit of Flint River Primitive Baptist Church on the subject of letting your moderation be known unto all men. In this message, we speak about the virtue that is letting your moderation be known, as it were, and I share passages of Scripture that exhort us to a life of temperance, not being extremist, with the one exception of being extremely zealous, but rather being Christian gentlemen, gentle to people, reasonable, objective, mild-mannered in our dealings with other people. Now, if you're like me, this is something that you probably struggle with in your own personal life. You wouldn't be alone in that. It's a tendency that we all have, and yet at the same time, God calls on us to be meek and lowly, people who are not extreme in our reactions or our behavior. We conclude this message today with a brief survey of some extremes in the Proverbs, relevant warnings that help us find a life of greater peace. Here is today's message, letting our moderation be known. As we begin to lay some groundwork, I want to say up front that as human beings, we are prone to extremes. We don't like to be in the middle of the road. Now, there are times, I will concede, that people are trying to be in the middle of the road because they're trying to please all parties. That's not what I'm speaking about today. I'm not telling you to have one foot in the church and one foot in the world so that you are the fence straddler trying to be on both sides of the fence at the same time. If something is right, it is right. If something is wrong, guess what it is? It's wrong. There is right and there is wrong. Now, we know in our lives there are various degrees of right and wrong. That's why if you run 75 and a 70, it doesn't carry the death sentence. We recognize that there are degrees of punishment based upon right and wrong and how right and how wrong something is. Yeah, we understand that. But if something is fundamentally right, it is right. If something is fundamentally wrong, it is wrong. And it's as simple as that. However, we are creatures that are prone to extremes. Some of the logical fallacies that we're warned against as we study debate and logic and reason involve the excluded middle. The excluded middle. Now, why would you call it the excluded middle? It's obviously a middle ground position between two extremes. Now, to give you a biblical example, we're extremes, and this is the most comical example of the extremes of humanity that I could think of in preparation for today's message, Acts chapter 28. Let me give you what happened in Acts 28 before this. Paul had been arrested. He was arrested in Jerusalem. He was being beaten because the Jews accused him of violating their laws, and they accused him of taking Gentiles into the temple. That hadn't happened. He hadn't done that. But they knew what he taught, and because of that, they are incensed that he's there. He gets arrested. As he's arrested, knowing that God, in his will, would have him go to Rome, you know what Paul does? He appeals to Caesar as a Roman citizen, and it gets him a free armed guard escort to Caesar. And this doesn't take place over a period of days or weeks. It takes place over a period of years. And you have some interesting characters involved. You have Felix and Porcius Festus. Paul is in a ship, and they're crossing the Mediterranean, and a terrible storm strikes the ship. They're in the sea and the waves are crashing and coming into the boat and everyone is terrified and they begin throwing things overboard and they're like, to survive this, we've got to jump out of the ship. And Paul, speaking through the Spirit, says, if you jump out of the boat, nobody's going to survive. The only way to be saved is to stay in the ship. Eventually, falling into a place where the two seas met, they ran the ship aground, and the fore part stuck fast and remained unmovable, and the hinder part was broken with the violence of the waves. The soldiers' counsel was to kill the prisoners, lest any of them should swim out and escape. But the centurion, willing to save Paul, kept them from their purpose and commanded that they which could swim should cast themselves first into the sea and get to land, and the rest, some on boards, some on broken pieces of the ship. And so it came to pass that they escaped all safe to land. And when they were escaped, then they knew that the island was called Melita. And the barbarous people showed us no little kindness, for they kindled a fire and received us every one because of the present rain and because of the cold. These barbarian people showed us no little kindness, that's a double negative, great kindness. They're kind to them. Because of the present rain, they kindle a fire. Paul gathered a bundle of sticks, and laid them out on the fire. Listen, there came a viper out of the heat and fastened on his hand. A snake shoots out of the fire and bites Paul on the hand. This is not a garden snake. This is not a black racer. Well, this viper is venomous. It comes out of the heat, fangs fasten into Paul's hand. What happens in this day and age with no anti-venom when you are bit by a venomous snake? Your hand swells and you can die. And so what these people, they interpret this as, because they're superstitious, when the barbarians saw the venomous beast hang on his hand, they said among themselves, no doubt this man is a murderer. Now, that's a little bit of hyperbole. You don't know anything about the man, and you just guess that because he got bit by a snake, he's got to be a murderer. Because, well, obviously everyone that gets bit by a snake is a murderer. Maybe there was just a snake in the bundle of wood. Well, this venomous beast is hanging on him. They say, oh, he's a murderer. And though he escaped the sea, vengeance suffereth him not to live. What does Paul do with this viper? Shakes it off into the fire. He just shakes it off. He shrugs it off. Now, you and I can't do that. Paul is an apostle endowed with special gifts through the Holy Spirit. There are no apostles remaining today. Shakes the snake off. Now, look at the reaction of the barbarians. What did they just accuse him of being? A murderer. He shook the beast off into the fire. He felt no harm. Howbeit, they looked when he should have swollen or fallen down dead suddenly, but after they had looked a great while and they saw no harm come to him, they changed their minds and said that he was a god. Now, talk about running the gamut of extremes. So you see the snake bite him and you're like, oh, murderer, vengeance doesn't suffer him to live. And then when he's not hurt, no, he's not a murderer, he's a deity. He must be a god. And this was not the first time that Paul was accused of being a god either. Do you remember when he's preaching and they're like, it's Mercury and Jupiter. They've come down to speak to us. And he says, we're men like you, subject to like passions. But because they had the power of God, ignorant, superstitious people mistook them as being gods. But you see the extremes that these two extremes that this group of people go to in their reaction to Paul. This to me has always pointed out the extreme nature of human reactions. They go witnessing the same thing from thinking he's a murderer to thinking he's actually a god walking around because the serpent did not hurt him. Now I'm going to share with you, and this is again in groundwork, a couple of passages from the New Testament. In the book of Philippians, there's a verse that maybe, as I've been speaking about avoiding extremes, perhaps has come into your mind. What verse might that be? It begins with, let your moderation be known unto all men. Look at Philippians 4:5.
Let your moderation be known unto all men. The Lord is at hand. Now, this word moderation isn't exactly what it means to us today, but it's not so far from that. It's not so far from that. The underlying Greek word means gentleness, forbearance, reasonableness, and considerateness. So when Paul says, let your moderation be known unto all men, one of the things that he has reference to is being a gentle soul. Is gentleness extreme as far as an emotional response? So I like to eat really hot food. Is that gentle on the palate? No. Gentleness is the opposite of extremely hot food or spicy food or extremely sweet food. It's just gentle. It's just gentle. Gentleness, moderation here, is a synonym for. Forbearance, when you're forbearing things, you're kind of enduring things that you don't really want to endure, but you're forbearing. How about the next one? Reasonableness. Sometimes all human beings can be unreasonable, including God's people, but we're called upon to be reasonable. And how I can make that case to you, Paul said to pray that he would be delivered from two types of men, unreasonable and wicked men. And then he says, what of them? For all men have not faith. Pray that we would be delivered from unreasonable and wicked men, for all men have not faith. So unregenerates have not faith. Unregenerates are wicked. Unregenerates are what? Unreasonable. Unreasonable. Have you ever tried to deal with an unreasonable person? Just unpack that word for a moment. Unable to be reasoned with. Have you ever engaged an unreasonable person? We can all be unreasonable and hard-headed, but an unreasonable person, no matter what you say, it's not going to have any effect. In fact, it's just going to make it worse. Because a lot of times, some of the most unreasonable people that I've ever had to deal with, that unreasonable, implacable nature was coupled with vindictiveness and control. And so you're just put in chains of bondage to people like that. And so let your moderation be known to all men is saying to be reasonable people. Now, this helps in the home. It helps in the workplace. It helps in the church. It helps everywhere. Being reasonable is a blessing. To be able to be reasoned with. And the last one there, the synonyms of this, moderation, considerateness, to be considerate. To be considerate of other people and their needs and their desires, the things that they feel, their thoughts. It is a good thing to be considerate. In fact, there's a word that over the past week has resonated in my mind over and over as I've been thinking about today's message. We're to be Christian gentlemen. Christian gentlemen. That used to mean something, to be a Christian gentleman. A lot of times that goes out the window today. How about another one? 1 Corinthians 9:25 says that if we're to be spiritually mature, then we should be people who are temperate, people of temperance. Every man that striveth for the mastery is temperate in all things. That goes hand in hand with this concept of being reasonable, being objective, listening, and weighing out what we hear rather than running to extremes. Now, I said I had a couple of theological implications of this concept. I'm going to rattle them off very quickly. I like to remind you here that neither the lordship salvation or the one who believes the new birth makes no difference in a person's life is correct. Lordship salvation says if you're not just a super saint, as holy as the most holy people out here, well, you're not really saved because heaven is for people like Paul and Daniel and blah, 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 and you just expect the people saying it to name themselves. And sometimes they do. Well, a lot of God's children in this world struggle with sin. Most of the ones that Jesus was nice to in his ministry were in that condition. The woman taken in adultery, the woman that washes his feet with her tears over and over and over. The strugglers are the people Jesus is nice to. And the religious elite, well, those are the people that Jesus is brutal to. So God's children struggle in this world. At the same time, to say the new birth makes no difference is an extreme, and it is unbiblical. The fruit of the Spirit is in our lives just as much as the flesh has a nature that manifests. The Spirit is a nature that manifests itself in our lives. Those are two extremes. Guess where the truth is? In the middle. Proverbs 26, verse 17. I mentioned this one the other day, but as I was thinking about today's message, I observed the extremes in this verse. Proverbs 26, 17, "He that passeth by and meddleth with strife belonging not to him is like one that taketh a dog by the ears." Now, I've told you that Proverbs are funny and ironic and sarcastic at times and pithy. What's the point here? If I see two people fighting over something and I come and start meddling with it, I'm like a person that's grabbed a dog by the ears. What's going to happen when you let go of one of those ears? You're going to get bit. Now, you're holding it by the ears, and it can't turn its head at you, and yeah, you've got it, but you're going to let go of one of those ears eventually, and you are going to get bit. You are playing with fire, to use a more modern expression. We are playing with fire when we do things such as that. But as I thought about that example, the head of a dog, you've got two extremes, one ear and the other ear. And so many times people, especially on social media or maybe in the workplace, they want you to take sides and they want you in their camp and they will twist your arm to get you in their camp when it might not have anything in the world to do with you at all. And people want to force you into one of these extremes. Does the ear get bit? The ear doesn't get bit. Who gets bit? You get bit. Because you took a dog by the ears. Those two ears represent the two arguing parties. You're the one that ends up suffering for it. So many times we're forced into an extreme side in conflict when what God would have you to do is just pass on by. I give you full permission to kick some rocks, whistle as you walk away. At one point in Jesus' ministry, a guy comes to Jesus and he says, "Jesus, my brother's locked me out of our inheritance." You know what Jesus says? That's terrible. I'm so sorry to hear it. Let me go reason. You know what he says? What does that have to do with me? Wait a minute. Paraphrasing. What does that have to do with me? Well, you're Lord of creation. Well, yes, but he wasn't here to settle disputes between siblings. And so what he's here to do is establish his church, preach the gospel, heal the sick, raise the dead, be crucified, resurrect, and ascend to glory. And he said, "I'm not wasting my time in your fuss." And this is Jesus. What does this have to do with me? Some of the most unreasonable people are the people that want you on their side to use you as a weapon against other people. Seen that happen. What's another one? Jesus being brought into conflict and his reaction. Do you remember when the woman is brought to him who was caught in the midst of adultery? What does he do? He starts drawing in the dirt. That's the equivalent of walk away kicking rocks, whistling as you go. I'm not getting in the middle of your nonsense. And then so finally, he's like, "Well, okay, whichever one of you that's never sinned in your life, you can cast the first rock." And guess what they all were? Sinners. So they all drop their rocks, beginning with the oldest, going to the youngest, and then they walk away. "Woman, where are your accusers? There are none, Lord. Neither do I condemn thee. Go sin no more." Avoid being pulled into conflict. Proverbs 18:13. "He that answers a matter before he hears it, it is folly unto him and shame." That one could benefit us a lot in this day and age. Answering a matter before you hear it. Again, people want to force you into extremes. And when we answer before we have all the facts, well, many times it's a folly and a shame unto us. Proverbs 25. Now, this is talking about food, but I think there's a greater principle here. Proverbs 25. Hast thou found honey? Where do they find honey in Solomon's day? Unless your name is Samson, who finds it in a lion carcass, you find it out in the wild. It's something that was a delicacy. It was valuable. It was sweet. It gave life some flavor. What happens when suddenly you come across something that's good? Let me give you a comparison. Parents will know. There's a day in October when kids walk around and terrorize the neighborhood saying trick or treat, and they get a bag full of something. What is that something? Candy. What does every good mama say to the kids? Don't eat so much or you'll get a tummy ache. Hast thou found honey? Eat so much as is sufficient for thee, lest thou be filled therewith and vomit it. What's that a warning against? Excess and extremes. Be careful not to be extreme. Now, this could have to do with anything. It could be suddenly coming into a windfall of money. It could have reference to hobbies and habits. Here it's talking about food. Beware of extremes. There's another example of extremes in the following verse. Withdraw thy foot from thy neighbor's house, lest he be weary of thee and so hate thee. Overstaying your welcome is an extreme. So it could be food. It could be time spent with someone. It could be overtaxing people around you. Extremes have a lot of different applications, and the Bible speaks about that. Here's one that we can be extreme about. Proverbs 30, and that is money. What are the two extremes we could have about money? We could be the blower of money, where we're wasting it, wasteful, and the Proverbs warn against wastefulness, a great waster. And the other extreme is someone who is the miser. And the Bible talks about not being a miser. But here in Proverbs 30, and this is verse 8, I believe that this 30th chapter, if you look, the words of Agur, the son of Jakeh, this is a portion of Proverbs that is not written by Solomon, it's believed. Two things have I required of thee, deny me not them before I die. Remove far from me vanity and lies. Give me neither poverty nor riches. The last example I'll use is that of being miserly versus blowing money, two extremes. However, this would be two extreme life situations. Feed me with food convenient for me. In other words, whatever you think is best, Lord. Whatever you think is best. Lest I be full and deny thee and say, who is the Lord? If I'm rich, it takes my eye off of my necessity on God's providence. And we have the tendency as humans to say, who is the Lord? In other words, well, I've worked hard. I've got all of this. Is not this great Babylon, which I've built with my own might and power? You remember what Nebuchadnezzar said in Daniel 4? How about the Laodiceans? Prosperity had caused them effectively to say in their heart, who is the Lord? We're rich. We don't need God's help. Remove from me vanity and lies. Give me neither poverty nor riches. Feed me with food convenient for me, lest I be full and say, who is the Lord? Or the other extreme, lest I be poor and steal and take the name of my God in vain. By the way, that tells you that taking God's name in vain doesn't just have to do with what we say. Because if I'm a thief, I'm taking God's name in vain because I'm saying I'm a follower of Christ, but my life doesn't reflect this name I've taken upon myself, Christ. I'm a person of Christ, and so if I'm stealing after being a follower of Christ, I'm taking His name in vain. There's a character mentioned in Proverbs 23:6 that many translations translate as miser. By the way, miser, does that sound like another word that we use? Miser sounds like misery or miserable. And I studied the etymology of this a couple of weeks ago. They actually come from the same word, because when that word miser was developed, he was looked at as a miserable person. Proverbs 23:6, eat not thou the bread of him that hath an evil eye, that he that hath an evil eye sometimes translates is two Hebrew words as miser. That's what's alluded to. Neither desire thou his dainty meats, for as he thinketh in his heart, so is he. Eat and drink, saith he to thee, but his heart is not with thee. The morsel which thou hast eaten shalt thou vomit up and lose thy sweet words. Now, is that really talking about food? If a person is a miser, he's going to throw it in your face that he's done something for you. It's one of the problems, and he might even expect you to do something for him in return or give you what he's given you back. That's why it says, be careful eating, because you might have to return it to him. Now, considering that thought for the last little time that I have, let me give you a couple of things that the Bible says about money and our response to it, and these are going to come from the book of Ecclesiastes. In Ecclesiastes, first of all, chapter 2, but also the book of Ecclesiastes, chapter 5, there are actually some things that are written about money, and Solomon warns us against the vanity of extremes with money. How did you enter this world? What were you wearing? Nothing. How are you going to leave this world? You going to carry anything with you? Who inherits the money that you leave? Ecclesiastes 2, 18 through 26. Yea, I hated all my labor which I had taken under the sun, because I should leave it unto a man that shall be after me. Who knoweth whether he shall be a wise man or a fool? Yet shall he have rule over all my labor wherein I have labored, and wherein I have showed myself wise under the sun. This also is vanity. Vanity in the Bible means pointlessness. It's pointless. It's vanity to be a miser, because you're leaving your money, all the money you hoard, for somebody else to blow. And what if they're a fool? You're going to leave it for a person that's a fool. And so what does he say? Well, it's better for a man to eat and drink and enjoy the good of his labor. Now, we don't want to be fools with our money, but we also don't want to be misers with it. You see, the real recommended pathway is in between both of those. And as Ecclesiastes 5 says, we were born into this world naked, we're going to die, and we're going to return to the dust. We didn't bring anything with us. We can't take anything with us when we go. And so hold everything that we have down here with a loose grip. Enjoy the fruit of your labor with the wife of your youth. Herein is wisdom. All above that is that V word. What's it again? Vanity. May we be people who let our moderation be known unto all men. May we be reasonable Christian gentlemen.
If you enjoy the messages you hear on Words of Grace, consider this your invitation to visit a Primitive Baptist church in your community. An online directory is available at marchtozion.com. Copies of this and other broadcasts are available for download on iTunes and on our website. And finally, Words of Grace is a listener-supported program. To contact us, address your correspondence to Words of Grace Radio, 641 Moontown Road, Brownsboro, Alabama, 35741, or visit us online at flintriverpbc.org.